we get to the line. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none. Ajahn Brahm once said, omitting nuns. So every time I get there, I giggle. No, not omitting nuns at all. They are actually the great and the mighty, the nuns, I believe. So they are definitely included as well. Okay, I hope you all were able to manage and cope with the heat. It's been a bit of a hot day. I'm sorry about that, although I can't do anything about it. But please stay well hydrated, okay? I heard some people had already some illnesses before they came here, so those people especially. I'm not your doctor, but just making sure. Okay, now we can do what is actually my job instead of giving you medical advice. Well, who knows? Maybe there's a question about how do I deal with my medical problems, but I don't know about that. Anyway, it's like a raffle. Winner gets to pick one of the animals. Winner gets the gorilla. Okay, and the winner is... Oh, okay, we're going with deep questions straight away. Maybe I'll leave those for later. So, new winner. Don't want to start the first day with that deep kind of stuff. Okay, this one is a long question, so I can't read it beforehand. Dear Venerable, thank you for the thorough clarification of the two hindrances to meditation. Well, there's five actually, but I just two I talked about, restlessness and sleepiness. I find it helpful to switch to walking meditation or body contemplation, etc., to overcome sleepiness. Yes. But then it goes the opposite way and the mind becomes restless and becomes hard to come to the present moment. Yes. Perhaps you can talk about staying in the present moment in walking meditation during guided meditation session tomorrow. Well, then we would have to do a guided walking meditation. And that might be a little bit clumsy. We're all walking back and forth in the hall. So maybe I will talk about it now. Staying in the present moment in walking meditation. Well, it's not actually much different or any different from staying in the present moment during any meditation or any activity, really. If you really enjoy it and you're happy to be there, it becomes easier to stay in the present moment. Now, the thing with walking meditation especially is that sometimes there's more stuff going on, especially if you like to maybe do some walking meditation outside, there's sounds in the forest, maybe people come walking by. So there's a little bit more distractions. And maybe walking meditation sometimes doesn't go as deep as sitting meditation. But never underestimate the power of walking meditation, because it's like an accessory, like it to your sitting meditation. It assists your sitting meditation as well. Sometimes when I done some walking meditation, actually just before the chanting, I came out of that door here because I was doing some walking meditation in there. And sometimes maybe it doesn't feel like I'm that much in the present moment as sometimes when I'm sitting, but sometimes after walking meditation, I sit down and the sitting meditation just becomes so much easier, because I'm already sort of prepared by the walking meditation. But in walking meditation, it's also to stay in the present moment, as I said, is to enjoy the present moment. And sometimes it might be you're walking and you don't find it very interesting. And it's the same, I talked a little bit about it already with breathing meditation. Sometimes you're focus on your breath and it's really boring. It's just breath going in, breath going out. How are you going to stay in the present moment when you're just watching something boring? Your mind will not be able to do it. I said before, when you go have a boring teacher, you won't be able to pay attention because it's just not interesting. So you have to somehow make it interesting. And with walking meditation, you can do, wow, I really have the ability to walk here and really feel the ground beneath my feet and just walk back and forth, really peaceful. Just really like give yourself like a motivational talk of how cool it is to do walking meditation and how lucky you are to be able to do it. Like that, it becomes more interesting and your mind is already more switched on. Like, oh yeah, this is a cool thing to do. I'm going to do it and I'm going to... Naturally, it will stay in the present moment more easily when you do that. So that is what I would give as the first and foremost advice, to stay in the present moment. I will talk much more about staying in the present moment probably during this retreat, because we all agreed we wanted it to be the retreat to be about peace, and peace is only found in the present moment. So whatever advice I'll give throughout this retreat about staying in the present moment applies to all sorts of meditations. Not only walking meditation, but also sitting meditation. And not just meditation on the breath, but also contemplation of the body. Yeah? Now, sometimes we have difficulty staying in the present moment because we enjoy thinking more than the present moment. So one piece of advice I just gave you is to make the present moment more interesting and more beautiful and more worthy of your attention. But another thing you can do is, some of you might already guess it, make the past and future less interesting. That's another way to relatively make the present moment more interesting. So what you do is you can like reflect to yourself, oh, all this thinking I've been doing during this retreat already. I've been thinking about what I'm going to do afterwards. I don't know what you have been thinking. I'm just speculating. But all this thinking that I've been doing, is that really helping me? Or is it just making me more anxious, more restless? And is it just sapping my energy? How much thoughts have you had in your life that were in hindsight just useless because whatever you thought about never happened? I used to have this thing, especially when I was like a teenager and mid to late teens, that when I knew I had a conversation with somebody the next day or something, maybe with a teacher or whatever, I would imagine the whole conversation. And if he says this, I will say that. And if they say this, then I reply like that. And then, oh yeah, then of course they'll say this. And then, oh yeah, of course I'll say that. And how often do you think the conversation happened the way I imagined it would be? I think not two words ever have gone the way I thought it would go. It's always different. So I soon learned that kind of a planning is useless. Yeah, you don't really get anywhere with that. And it's much more beneficial to relax and energize your mind by staying in the present moment. Then you're much better prepared for your conversation or whatever you have going on. And luckily, in my early 20s, I already realized that, maybe a bit earlier. And once I had the most important conversation in my lay life, you know what it was about? It was defending my master thesis with my professors. Ooh. if they say this, I'll say that. No. By that time, I was cleverer than that. I didn't think of anything that they would say. I didn't think of anything that I would say. I was just thought, I've prepared this thesis, I've worked on it for a year, so I should know what I should answer if they ask me all the difficult questions. Yeah? And you know what happened? I went into that, well, it was not really supposed to be a conversation, but more like an interrogation, you know? They're going to really drill you, like, why did you do it this way? And why not that? And how this and that? And I won't bore you with the details, but I came out of that conversation, out of that interrogation, and my main professor said, oh, it felt more like we were talking to a colleague. And I felt really proud of that. And that was because I did not go into the conversation with this idea that I was the student and I had to give all the right answers. I just relax and see what happened. And that's always the way in life. Well, sometimes you need to plan certain things, of course, but we worry way too much. And all that worrying is not helpful. And if you contemplate like that, like, what is the use of all this thinking? Is it really making me happy? Or is it just a distraction? Is it just worries, needless anxiety? Then your thoughts will have less power over you. And your mind will be more inclined to stay in the present moment because that's where it can find peace and happiness. And it won't find happiness in the thoughts anymore. So that's another way to stay in the present moment. Okay, that was 10 minutes for one question. Well, this is not that bad, actually. Well, of course, you can add more questions later and tomorrow and stuff. But I once did a retreat in Poland, and they usually don't have many monks there, so they had so many questions, and we had the three-hour question and answer session every day, and still not did all the questions. But we should be okay. I'll keep it to an hour. Don't worry. Thank you, Venerable, for the story about Sona. Well, you should thank the Buddha for that. What does Sona mean? I think that's just a name, actually. It doesn't really mean anything. I know there is a monk in Canada named Venerable Sona. Yes, there is. And some of the monks from Bodhiana have stayed with him as well. But I'm not sure that it means anything, so that's an easy question. It doesn't mean anything. Do you know Venerable Ananda? Does it mean anything? No. What does Venerable Ananda mean? Bliss. Happiness and bliss. Okay. Sunyo means empty. So when I gave you meditation, no, I'll talk about that later. Too deep for the start. Okay. Later. How do you know that you've reached enlightenment? Okay. Dear Venerable Sunyo, I'm in a happy relationship with a partner, no kids. Okay. Maybe that's why you're happy, no kids, I don't know. Okay, it says context. Okay, this is a briefing in three sections. Context, issue, and question. So the context is, I'm in a happy relationship with a partner, no kids, but I'm also feeling the pull to renounce, let go more, as I gain more insight from my meditation practice and listening to Ajahn Brahm's deeper Dhamma talks, like the range retreat talks. Okay, I feel where this question is going. If I continue to live as a lay person in a relationship, I feel like my practice will just be a superficial one and won't be 100% like yourself living in a monastery. Well, I don't think that's only feel like it. That is like that because you won't live in a monastery. But don't worry. That's very conducive to take the practice to a deeper level. What are your thoughts on this? Dank u wel, that is Dutch for thank you. Well, my thoughts on this are that you can only decide for yourself, of course, what is the best way to go about things. But I would definitely say, do not underestimate the power of the practice of a layperson. And also do not overestimate the power of practice of the monastics, the monks and nuns. Yeah? It's not like you put on the robe and suddenly you become blissful. Well, if your name is Ananda, then you, in a sense, you become blissful straight away, but only by name. I'm sure that, or maybe, I don't know, maybe you're always blissful. But I know for myself that it wasn't like that. You're still the same person, and you have many of the same problems. Of course, the monastic life is very, very conducive to developing the path. But so can the lay life be. Yeah? When I was a lay person, I had very nice meditations. And it's actually the power of meditation that brought me here. And it's not like I thought, oh, I'll be a monk because as a lay person I can't practice. It's just my practice was already so profound that I just wanted to make the next step. So definitely do not think that your practice will just be a superficial one. That is not, doesn't have to be the case. In the time of the Buddha as well, there's many people who got to stages of deep meditation and stages of deep insight as lay people. Yeah? And the Buddha always talked about the fourfold assembly, which means you've got the nuns and the monks and the lay women and the laymen. It's a fourfold assembly that are the practitioners in the Buddha's path. And it's not just monks and nuns. Yeah? I've seen many people also who idolize the monk's life. Is that proper English? Yeah. Idolize the monk's life, and then they come to the monastery with big expectations, and they don't last very long sometimes. So, you might also idolize the monk's life more than you think. What matters more is how you approach your relationship with your partner. Yeah? And when I said I had deep meditations as a layperson, I was also in a relationship and living together as well. So don't underestimate what you can do. Actually, sometimes being in a relationship, if it's a good relationship, you can also practice many wholesome qualities like generosity, kindness, patience. Yes, that's for sure. I remember that. I think Mataji can also relate, no?
Tolerance.
Tolerance. So it's a good opportunity. However, having praised the lay life, I can also, of course, relate to what you're saying, because now I'm in the robes, and I didn't used to be. So if I thought that lay life was the ideal way of practice, then of course I wouldn't have gone into the robes. But it's an individual thing. For some people, the lay life actually is the ideal way of practice. Yeah? And for some crazy people, it's the monks or the nuns. And maybe you're one of those crazy people. So I can't answer that for you, but it might be. I can say that my relationship, there were multiple reasons that we separated. But one of them was that we grew apart. I got more interested in like this Buddhism stuff, and she didn't. So then it becomes hard to relate to one another, and that is one of the reasons that we separated. So I don't know, might also happen for you. But one final thing, if you do have these kind of ideas and you still don't have kids, then also don't try to get any kids. I'm not kidding. It's funny, okay, I realize. Because it might seem obvious or something. But because once you have kids, I feel you have at least to a certain age a responsibility to take care of them. That's just my opinion. I've haven't got kids myself, of course, but I've also seen people enter the ropes with still very young kids, and then it just doesn't feel right for them, so they disrobe as well again. So, yeah. Hope that makes sense. Dear Venerable, which sutta is last night's emptiness meditation from? Big metta and thanks. Oh, big metta to you as well. It's from the discourse on emptiness, either the short one or the long one. Can't remember, but they are both in the Majjhima Nikaya. So somewhere in the 120s or something, I believe. Maybe I'm completely wrong about that, but somewhere in the Majjhima Nikaya. Maybe I'll actually I'll look it up and give you a more specific answer. Now we've got four piles still to do, to answer in detail, done. So maybe done, I should just, done. And, no, is it right? Deeper questions. Oh no, I'm doing it wrong already. Difficult. Okay, this is the Sona one, done. The last time, what I did is just tip this whole basket and put the done questions back in there, but there was also a pair of scissors in there that fell, so I'm not do that again. Oh yeah? How do you know how to reach enlightenment, still to do? Relationship? Walking meditation. This is... Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Now I'm completely in my element. Should you meditate only when you feel like it, or should you push yourself to do it? It says number one, question one, but then there's no question two. So the pen must have run out of ink. Well, I wouldn't phrase this like, should you push yourself to do it? But sometimes you think you don't feel like meditating. So you think, I'm not going to do it, whatever, boring, just sitting there. I'm going to do something more productive or whatever, you think like that. But just try and meditate then as well. Sometimes you'll be surprised. It might only be a superficial thought in your mind. Like, once you sit down, it might go away straight away. And you actually might enjoy that meditation session much more. Yeah? But sometimes you think, at least I do, oh, I really feel like meditating now. I'm going to do it now. It's going to be the best. It's just a disappointment in the end. But sometimes it's the opposite. You don't expect much because you're like, oh, I'm just meditation, whatever. And you sit down, and wow, the mind just becomes peaceful straight away. So don't push yourself to do it, but try to go a little bit beyond your comfort zone. Yeah, try to meditate a little bit more than you think is what you want to do. Yeah, just stretch it a little bit, especially when you're on a retreat like this. I know I said We don't have any fixed time for meditation. We don't force you to come to any of the talks or guided meditations even. And that gives you a lot of freedom. But I would also like if you use that freedom to really try and meditate a bit. But maybe a bit more than you usually do. After all, this is a meditation retreat. But also, don't push yourself too much. You have to decide for yourself when it is too much. And this will differ from person to person, from day to day, and from year to year. And that's because it differs so much, that's why I don't set a schedule. Yeah? I have to apologize to those people who would have benefited from a schedule. And there might be a few of you here, but maybe you can make your own schedule if that is beneficial to you. I'm not even going to suggest one, because then I know there will also be people who won't benefit, who are just going to do it anyway. So try and meditate a little bit more than you would think you'll be comfortable with. But also, outside of meditation, it doesn't have to be black and white. Sometimes we think like, okay, now I'm meditating and now I'm not. But when we do here a guided meditation, for example, when I walk back to my room, I'm still pretty much in the meditation zone. So I just walk peacefully there. Yeah? And when I drink a cup of tea, I can also do it with a lot of awareness. And it's almost also like a meditation. So you can do the same. And you don't have to sit all the time with your eyes closed even. You can also, well, it's been a bit hot today, but hopefully it'll cool down. And then you can also just go outside, have a walk in the forest, or just sit on one of the stupas, that's those pointy things on the grass. You can sit there and just look over the forest, have a cup of tea or just something to drink, and just enjoy the peace of this place. It's a very beautiful place, actually. And lots of meditation has happened here. Lots of good teachings have been given here. And it's really a good atmosphere. So you can just absorb the atmosphere and let that be a sort of meditation as well. So just try and live your day here mindfully and at peace as much as you can. Why avoid sleeping in luxurious beds? Okay, so this is one of the precepts that the monks and the nuns keep. And I think it's also one of the precepts for lay people in certain days. But my answer would be, luxurious beds are very uncomfortable. Actually, to be honest, I've got not a luxurious bed here, but it's like a mattress this thick. And I go at night, I actually walk back to my kuti to sleep on my mattress, which is like this. And I don't do that out of asceticism, because I find it more comfortable. But the monks and the nuns have that training rule, that precept, because we have to live simple lives. And as I said, even a mattress like this is not really considered a luxurious bed. What is considered a luxurious bed was like in the time of the Buddha, they say, like with coverings hanging over and silk cushions and that sort of stuff. That's how it's explained. And of course, you can understand why monks and nuns should not indulge in that, because it's just overly luxurious and costs a lot of money, and we have to set an example of living simple. But that doesn't mean that we have to sleep on a bed of nails or something like that. Don't worry. Yeah, especially monks who actually need a more comfortable mattress, or nuns, that's fine as well. And the bed you're sleeping on, I hope, is comfortable for you. And over here, I also would not consider those very luxurious bed because it's just a standard bed, probably just from IKEA or something. Yeah, I think from IKEA. Yeah, the ones in the nun's cottage, I think I assembled, actually. Or was it the tables? I can't remember now. Some of the furniture in there I assembled when it first arrived. So, it's also a little bit having to do with indulgence in sleeping. Sometimes, I know I say the word sometimes a lot, actually, but sometimes you are on a meditation retreat and it's a little bit boring, you know. You're meditating, nothing much going on. You're used to watching television or whatever, or going out with your friends. And now the most excitement you got all day is a monk getting confused which pile of piece of paper. So it's not very interesting. And then when that happens, the mind can get dull and sometimes more sleepy than it needs to be. And you just indulge in sleeping in. And it's almost not really depression, but sometimes when people get depressed, they also sleep much more than they actually need. And it's a little bit comparable to that sometimes. So maybe we should interpret it more like that. Avoid sleeping in luxurious bed is meant to not overindulge in sleeping. Okay. Actually, they don't mix very too well. Okay. Thank you for your guidance on dealing with physical body tension and discomfort during meditation. Would you have any advice when the discomfort involves something other senses? For example, I have allergies to strong scents, which can trigger sneezing, even headache. I experienced this during our meditation session in this hall with regard to strong, peaceful used petrol.
Perfume.
How can I manage this reaction during meditation? And would you advise solo meditating? Thank you. First of all, I would ask people who use strong perfume to not use it. Not during this retreat anyway. Yeah, because of this reason. Some people are a bit allergic to it. Yeah, I also, when I was a lay person, sometimes go to the cinema or something, and they said that this lady in front of you, this whole strong odor. Yeah. They think it smells nice, but not really. So, of course, you don't have to be a sweaty bum, but try to not use strong perfumes. That's actually also one of the precepts, of the 8 precepts as well. So that's my first thing. And then, if those people still use the strong perfumes, to answer this question, would you advise solo meditating? I definitely would advise that as well. You've all got your beautiful room. Okay, it may be a little bit hot during this time of year, but so is mine. Well, I do have an air conditioning, but I haven't used it today, actually, because I wanted to relate to all of you who don't have an air conditioning. So we're all the same. And it was actually pretty okay. Yeah, you sit there in your room, you just sit still. So it's nice. Some people pay for that. They call it a sauna. So you get it for free. Wow. Excellent. So yeah, solo meditation is really great, actually. It can be, that's why we have these hot scattered through the forest, so we are very isolated. So yeah, you can do that. And don't, if there's any discomfort you can avoid somehow, then please do it. Don't purposely go into situations that trigger sneezing and headaches. Yeah, sometimes you can't avoid it, maybe during this talk or during a guided meditation, but if you can avoid discomforts, then do so. And that is not just for this person, but that's of course for everybody. I already said, if you need to sit on a chair for meditation, do so. And maybe sometimes you sit on the floor, sometimes you sit on the chair. And maybe sometimes you sit on one cushion, sometimes maybe on two, sometimes on four, five, six. I've seen really crazy meditation nests. Okay, that's getting there. But I've seen much nicer meditation nests, actually. And I'm not laughing at that. Please do so. Find what is comfortable for you. It's really important. Because if you start out with discomfort, it just create more difficulties than you need. Yeah? I've already talked about that a little bit. But sometimes you can't avoid. You can't avoid it. Like sometimes you sit, maybe the person in front of you has the strong perfume. Maybe then you just move to another place in the hall. Hey. I'm the only one who has to sit in the same spot every day. You don't. You can switch around as much as you like. Make it a game of musical chair. Okay, don't go sit on somebody else's chair. They might like their chair, but there's still more chairs or sitting places. So you can swap around. But sometimes even when you are there, okay, there's discomfort. Yes, this one. There's discomfort you can't avoid. What do we do then? What do we do? I'll give you two options, and you can vote afterwards. Okay, to make it a little bit interactive, I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing, but that might be an idea. So, the answer will be obvious anyway. What do we do? That person, stupid perfume, and it said in the rules that you shouldn't wear perfume. And Sunyo said it even in the talk yesterday, and they still wear the perfume. Or do we go, okay, this is just a momentary thing. My eyes can drip. I might be sneezing, but at least I'm here in this hall, in this beautiful place. So how, well, maybe I should ask, how would you react? But no, I ask, how should we preferably react? Who votes for number one? Who votes for number two? Yes, of course. Okay, it's easy when I put it like that, huh? When I exaggerate. But I exaggerate just to make a point. Because the first one is the way we usually would react. Or something close to that anyway. We go in that direction of ill will and being upset. It's just, for so many people, the natural inclination of the mind. And it used to be mine as well. Yeah? But through practice, through always finding beauty in the world and in things that happen, you can be so inclined that your initial reaction is not one of ill will, but just one of maybe compassion. Maybe that person really stinks so bad that they need the perfume. I don't know. Are those people? No. Like when I talked to you before about the car that drove into the bins at Bodhinyana Monastery, like 3 days ago now, and clearly on purpose, the whole bin's destroyed. 5 new bins we have to order from the Shire. When I saw them first, my initial reaction was not, stupid person, but really compassion. Like, If that is the best thing you can do with your day, then wow, your life really sucks. Like, how nuts do you have to be? Sorry to say it. But wow, your life must really be really, really boring, you know, to do that, to find excitement in that. So I have compassion to those people, and hopefully they'll find better ways one day. Yeah? Maybe one day they'll come and look, see if the bins are still crashed, and one of the monks is there and says, "Hello, oh, you're the person who crashed our bins. Come and have a nice meal with us. Because every day is free food from the people, and you can come here and use the meditation. Oh, beautiful car, by the way. Wow, such a nice bumper in front as well." Did you see the video? It looked like a special crash thing in the front. Yeah, but this was not a normal one. It was really like wedge shape. Yeah. So that person might that person might then be like, "Oh, I'm going to change my ways now." And one day they'll be here in a meditation retreat. That's what I hope. And that would be a great way to get rid of all the hoons that we have. Actually, a lot of problems with on this road, but anyway. So, that was a long answer to... Should you push yourself to... No, it was another question. I'm going to... It's difficult. I don't even remember the question, but it doesn't matter. I would like to develop a daily meditation practice, but have not been able to do this consistently. Well, we're only one day in. Okay, I know what you mean. Any suggestions on how to achieve this? Thanks. I have tried to do this early in the morning, but sometimes feel sleepy or not that bright. No gusto. Yeah, no gusto in the morning. No rise with gusto. Well, it doesn't matter. You don't have to meditate with gusto. Sometimes you just meditate by yourself and gusto is not there. You just meditate with Ananda or somebody else. No. Yeah, to develop a standard practice is... The best way is to just meditate regardless of what you feel like. If you're going to wait until you feel like it, then you'll wait forever sometimes. Yeah, sometimes I feel sleepy. Okay, I'm not going to do it. I feel sleepy. But that way, you'll just procrastinate. Yeah? So instead of that, just tell yourself, okay, I feel sleepy. My meditation probably won't be as gusto as normal, but I will at least sit here or walk here for 5 minutes, whatever. Yeah? And 5 minutes is all I have to do every day. You might have a window of 30 minutes, like a time window of 30 minutes, but you just say, okay, 5 minutes is enough, and after that I can decide whether I sit for longer or not. Yeah? If you go into it immediately with the intention, oh, I'm going to sit for 30 minutes every day, it's too hard, often. And that's not just the case with meditation, but with other habits you would like to develop in life. Like, as monks, you sit around a lot, meditating, giving talks and stuff. And I realized at some point that makes me a little bit ill, so I need to do some exercise from pretty regularly, actually. So I set myself a goal. I will do just 10 minutes of exercise, and then I'll see if I feel like doing some more. Like it could be walking or, you know, just crazy jumping around in my hut or whatever. I don't need to explain what I do, but I won't show you as well, but it looks really silly, I think. But just do 10 minutes, and then after that I'll see if I want to continue. And most of the time, at the start, I don't feel like it. It's like this, just feels very uncomfortable. But after 10 minutes, you sort of get into the groove, and it's not that bad, actually, and just decide to continue. And I've got the... That's maybe why the Nike company of the shoes, you know, and the basketballs and stuff, they have the motto, just do it. Yeah? And it's same with meditation. Just do it. Yeah? You don't have to do it on your Nike Airs, but you just do it. Well, you can do walking meditation on those, maybe. But you just sit down and you see what happens. You know, just 5 minutes, just do it. You don't. If you wait for motivation for things, you often wait forever. But motivation, this is one of the strangest things, often comes after you've already started. Like action precedes motivation. And we expect it to be the other way around, motivation preceding action. And it often doesn't work like that. And now, don't worry if your question is still in the bottom. We've got a couple more days to go. But when I meditated as a layperson specifically, I had what I found quite a nice method to judge how long would be right to meditate. Often I did not set any goal in time because I quickly learned that either that creates like a tension, like, oh, I have to make it at least X amount of minutes, like 30 minutes or whatever, or even if you enjoy it, you're still like expecting, okay, the bell will ring soon. And even that can sometimes be a distraction, even if you enjoy it. So what I often did as a layperson is meditate in the evening when it doesn't matter whether I meditate for a long time or a short time because I don't have to go to work or school anyway. So I just meditate early evening. And what I did is I just sat down and decided I'll just meditate. And at some point, you'll all be able to relate. You'll feel like, I've had enough of this meditation. I'm going to do something else now. Yeah, it becomes uncomfortable or your mind just gets restless to that point that it just wants to quit. I decided I'll always overcome that once. And once I overcome it and feel peaceful again, then I can stop meditating. Then you always... It's two benefits. First of all, you learn to not agree to that kind of mindset that wants to get away from things, from meditation. And second of all, you always end your meditation on at least with a certain positive mindset. If you always end your meditation when your mind is like, this meditation, stupid, I'm going to do something else, then you'll have a negative attitude to meditation. And with a negative attitude to meditation, it becomes even harder to sit down the next day. Yeah. So that's another way to develop this continual practice, by making meditation seem more attractive, by having a better relationship with meditation. And there's so many ways that you can do that. I gave you an example. You can also just contemplate the benefits you get out of it. What is the beauty of meditation? And if you're a devout Buddhist, you might even think, I'm doing exactly what the Buddha was doing. So that's beautiful to do even when I don't have gusto, when I'm sleeping. When I'm sleepy, it's always a good thing to do. And then you just make meditation more attractive and you'll be more inclined to do it. Yeah? I hope that helps. But the most important thing is to just do it. And everybody's got a couple minutes every day to meditate. So if you want to make it a standard thing in your life, which would be a very good thing, then at least take those couple of minutes. Tomorrow. But now then, in the end, we will all have all the deep questions at once. Maybe that's not a good idea either. Okay, I'll answer that one then. It doesn't sound like a deep question, but for me it is. That's why. What made you realize you wanted to become a Buddhist monk? Well, I sort of touched upon it already when I was talking about that relationship thing. And that is meditation and the results that it gave me. I didn't think like, those guys have got cool haircuts, I want the same. Or, wow, cool clothing. No, of course not, nothing like that. I also didn't idolize the monk life. Like, if I finally get out of this relationship, then I'll be happy as a monk. Oh, I sort of, maybe I should phrase it this way. I did not want to become a monk. I wanted to unbecome a layperson. I didn't want to become anything else. I just wanted to get out of samsara, basically. That's the real answer. And I thought being a monk would be the best way to do it. Oh, by the way, I also did not become a monk because of Ajahn Brahm's jokes. Sometimes people ask, why did you ordain all the way in Australia? I'm from the Netherlands, by the way. And then I say, well, definitely not because of the jokes. I'm sure Ajahn Brahm will be able to appreciate that. It's because of the very deep teachings that Ajahn Brahm is also able to give. And those drew me in, and that is why I became a monk. Oh, double question. Please tell us a little bit about your journey to become a Buddhist monk. Nah, boring. But maybe if we have time, another day. My life is really boring, you know. Sometimes we seem like we have all these cool stories about people crashing into the bins and stuff, but to be honest, monk's life is pretty boring. I don't mind, I like boring. But even before that, it wasn't that interesting, so I won't bore you with that. Except when I don't know anything to say, then I'll get back to the question, because just talking about your own life is very easy. Aside from metta, I've mainly heard, don't do anything meditation. In quotes, don't do anything meditation. But it seems there's an entire tool chest of slightly more active meditations / reflections / imaginings. Do the useful tools emerge over time, like the mind gravitating towards certain tools, or do you have to purposefully try out and develop skill with each tool for them to be useful? This seems a bit counter to don't do anything. Well, that's a very good question, actually, and maybe I'll just end today with that one. I know there's still a few more left, so tomorrow I might be speeded up a bit. But the question is, do we just don't do anything in meditation, or do we sometimes be a bit more active? And the answer is both. The Buddha taught many types of meditation. But in the end, they'll all lead to the same goal. When I did the Dragon Ball Z meditation at the start, well, just actually the meditation of emptiness. Let's forget about Dragon Ball Z meditation. The meditation on emptiness, the purpose was not to make the mind more active. The purpose was to have the mind let go of things. Have it let go of the outside world. Forget about the world beyond the boundaries of this meditation center. Pretend that it doesn't exist. And if you do that, I hope some of you have tasted it a little bit of what that practice can bring. It actually leads to less doing in the mind, because there's less stuff to think about. There's less that gets you excited. So all these active reflections are a tool to lead to peace and not doing anything. For many people, if you just give the instruction, don't do anything, well, it's a beautiful instruction, can be a bit too simple sometimes. Or maybe I should say too profound in a sense. Yeah, you just sit there, don't do anything. It's too far beyond them, and you need a little bit of a crutch in a way to get into it. And the Buddha gave many, many reflections and teachings other than just sitting there. And those are all very helpful. And meditation is very much like a tool kit. Like you have all these different tools. When I work in the monastery, I often did a lot of woodworking. And I made, like, for example, the furniture over at that side where we have a couple of huts. I made all the beds there just out of logs. And when you do woodworking, you don't have only a hammer. You won't get very far with only a hammer. You've got a saw, you've got a chisel, you've got a couple of hammers and stuff. Yeah. And it's the same in meditation. It's very helpful to have different tools for different jobs. So earlier I talked about restlessness and sleepiness being like two opposites. And if you're restless, you develop certain mind states. And if you're sleepy, you develop others. If you're sleepy and you just calm the mind more, the Buddha said that's not a good idea, because you'll just get more sleepy. Whereas as you're restless, then it's the right time to calm the mind. So what you do in meditation depends a lot on what happens inside the mind. Depends a lot on the context. And I like to have a few different ways of meditating. And over time you get really skilled in knowing, this is the right time to develop this type of meditation. For example, when I had to give the first talk over here, and I don't get really nervous or anything, but you can imagine I sit down to meditate, and what does the mind do? I'm going to plan the talk. And you might have noticed it was sort of a chaos, maybe. Not really, but not useful to sit meditating, planning a talk. So what did I do? Instead of just sitting there doing nothing, I realized if I sit here do nothing, the automatic inclination of my mind is to plan the talk. That is not doing nothing, I know. But if I try to do nothing, that is what it does. Yeah, and you might have similar things. So what did I do then? I did the reflection on emptiness. I just imagined there were no retreatants here. Nobody was going to show up in this hall. It's just going to be me, and I wouldn't have anything to say. I just imagined Jhana Grove being empty of people. And then when I really had that reflection and convinced myself that it was that way, then why would I think about giving a talk? I'm not going to give a talk to myself or to the teddy bears. So then I stopped thinking about the talk. And I've done that before. That's why I know how to do that. So those tools work towards don't do anything. So they're not opposites. And to answer the final part of the question, and I realize we'll be bang on time for once with these questions and answers, which is great. To answer the final part, do you have to purposely try out, or does the mind gravitate towards certain tools? And that is both. Both. Sometimes meditation, I say sometimes again, sometimes, I don't mind, sometimes. Sometimes. Get them all out so I don't have to say it again. Meditation, you sit there and your mind is creative. It suddenly thinks of, I recognize this hindrance. This is what I'll do to get rid of it or to get around it. And you develop your own little tools to meditate. So sometimes these tools just come automatically. And I will not give you any examples now, but I have also sometimes figured out certain ways to reflect that just came by themselves. And sometimes, I don't know, why do I mind saying something? I don't know. I don't mind anymore. So, sometimes you purposely do them. And when I'm completely distracted now by my own talk about sometimes. I shouldn't have even have brought it up, you know. But that's why I give these different reflections. You try them out, see if they work, and it might be that they do. It can be that you have to develop them more often than just once. Like the reflection on emptiness, if you do it the first time, it's a bit weird. Never done it before, it doesn't really click, it doesn't work, so you might be like, I'm not going to do that ever again, that doesn't work. Nah, give it another shot maybe sometimes, when you feel like it. Yeah? So, therefore, we do different meditation methods. And people have their own favorites, but don't feel like you only have to do one. Be flexible in meditation, especially when you have a retreat like this. You have the time to practice multiple ways of meditating and see how they complement one another. So tomorrow I'll give you some other ways to meditate, and I do plan to teach on a very traditional way of meditating, which is mindfulness of the breathing, tomorrow morning. This is always a very beautiful one to do. Yeah. Okay. So, that's it. Other questions, I'll do another time. This one, what was this again? Oh yes, the one I had to remember to bring the sutta. Okay. Let's say sadhu to the Buddha's teachings. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.